This is Fantasy Sports Today. This is Chris Meany. I'm Ashley Docking. We're glad that you could join us here today live from the Fantasy Sports Network. We have Pat Mayo, who's going to join us in just a little while. We're talking NFL, DFS, Week 1, quarterbacks, yes, to be very specific. And then it's Fantasy Alarm Week, as we've been saying. So Ray Flowers jumps on, who also doubles as Sirius XM host. So that's coming up a little bit later on as well. It's going to be a pretty good show.
Some of his favorite targets.
We got some of his favorite targets. Yes, some unexpected targets, to be quite honest, when we
got
the list from him.
For
so
sure.
It'll be interesting to hear his justifications behind that, which I'm sure will convince you one way or another to change your decision. It's easy to make someone change a decision come fantasy season. But first, let's talk a little bit about Jamaal Charles, because there is some concern if he's ready to take on the regular workload of RB1.
Yeah, and it doesn't seem like that's going to happen right off the get-go. And I think we talked about this before, Ashley, throughout the past couple of weeks, is that Charles coming off a significant knee injury, and there was even talk in the offseason that they would just not rush him back. Andy Reid knows that this team is, he's got a good team. He's got a great defense. They're probably going to make the playoffs. That would be my guess. And if they want to do any damage in the playoffs, they need a healthy, fresh Jamaal Charles. And Spencer Ware and Charcandrick West filled in nicely at times when there was no Jamaal Charles. These guys were not only startable in fantasy, but they could make things happen in the backfield because Andy Reid likes to use his running backs. He's known to do that. So don't worry. I wouldn't worry too much about Jamaal Charles. I think once we get going here into the season, especially in weeks 2 and 3, we're going to see a little bit close to that full workload. But I wouldn't shy people away from drafting Spencer Ware. It's not going to cost you anything. And just if anything does happen to Jamaal Charles, which you're getting, in my opinion, at a discount, but Spencer Ware can help you out. He can help you out in the passing game as well. He can catch some balls. As you see there, he has some decent numbers
when he started. 5.6 yards per carry. And out of backs that took at least 25% of their team snaps, it was Ware who earned the most yards after contact. Additionally, he got 9 opportunities within the 10-yard line within the red zone to score, and he scored on 5 of those opportunities. So he was efficient given the opportunity.
Yeah, he's the guy you want over Charcandrick West.
Okay, I like it. Yes. You know what? Let's take a second to talk about Teddy Bridgewater, because bad news for him as well as the Vikings yesterday. He went down in practice, a non-football injury. Everyone was very concerned. He was down for a significant amount of time. The ambulance was called in. Yeah. They had to stabilize his knee. Turns out he not only dislocated his knee, but he tore his ACL, a full tear, as well as other structural damage. So he's out for the season, needless to say. One of the reporters had asked him if he's done for the season. I'm going to go ahead and say yes. Disappointing for the Vikings, who were setting themselves up to have quite a good season. The line on them was, I think it was over 11 wins.
Yeah, it was like 10.5, and then they took that right off the board minutes after the injury. Yeah, it's too bad for Bridgewater. Like you said, a team that was destined to make the playoffs almost beat Seattle if it wasn't for a missed field goal in the playoffs last season. So what does this all mean for everybody? I mean, Bridgewater wasn't somebody that you were going to draft. Maybe you had him in a keeper league, in a dynasty league. It's just not spectacular. I mean, Minnesota threw the ball fewer than anybody in the NFL last season, only 28 times per game. So you have to think that it doesn't really affect a guy like AP. People are like, oh, they're going to stack the box. They've been stacking the box on AP for six, seven years now.
It's
what
they
do. And 357 touches last year, number one in the NFL among running backs. So I don't think it affects him all that much. I think you're going to see Minnesota maybe make a move for a backup, because now what happens if Sean Hill goes down? Sean Hill, a starter before, we've seen him come into a situation. I know when he was with the Lions, he had some weapons around him. He was okay. Not great numbers in terms of just touchdowns to interception ratio if you really just look at his whole stats as a career, even before St. Louis. But for Hill, I think maybe if there's a guy who takes a downtick in the offense, I think it's maybe Stephon Diggs, because he seemed to have a little bit of a connection with Bridgewater just in the passing game, as a guy who was just going to get some catches in the slot, like 5 or 6 catches a game. Just a miniature, maybe, Julian Edelman, not quite as nice, but just a guy who plays the same role. So I think you want to stay clear of this whole offense besides AP. Yeah. I think maybe AP will just be fine, and you're going to get him at a discount.
And speaking of steering clear of the offense in Miami, the receiving core is being a little bit dismantled. You have Devontae Parker, who's dealing with his second hamstring injury already in the preseason, Chris.
Yeah, Devontae Parker, even just not even the preseason, last year too, this guy was hurt a lot. So not a lot of good reports from this guy so far, and is somebody that I was certainly in on. And if he just continues to fall down, I think it's worth a shot. If he's going to fall outside wide receiver 40, 45, I think it's worth a shot to go ahead and draft this guy. We see tremendous talent. Those 3 touchdowns he had last season, all 3 of them were just highlight reel grabs. Kenny Stills is somebody that needs to be on your radar. Also a little bit dinged up. His back locked up on him on Monday. But he's been real nice with Tannehill to start the season. Wide receiver 98. He's not costing you anything come draft day, he's not even really getting drafted. So it depends on how your draft goes. If you're short on wide receivers, maybe you just go ahead and you just take Kenny Stills with your last pick.
What do you think about taking a shot on someone named John Brown, because he was diagnosed with a concussion earlier in August and then had tried to come back to practice a few times and suffered multiple setbacks? The consensus is that he's fine now. However, the status of him is non-committal for week one. We're not sure if he's going to be there. You have Michael Floyd on the team, who's in a contract year, and you know that players in a contract year tend to trend upwards. He's set for a career year, really. And then you have also Larry Fitzgerald. So right now it's looking like John Brown, wide receiver three.
Yeah, I mean, all three of these guys actually finished in the top 30 among wide receivers, which is crazy to think, but that's what Arizona does. They have so many options. Carson Palmer. John Brown is my least favorite of the three. I like Larry Fitzgerald, especially in a PPR league, coming off almost a career year, which is crazy to say for a guy who's been in the league for 12, 13 years. Michael Floyd's got some tremendous upside as well. John Brown is not on my radar, but again, much like Parker, if this guy's going to continue to fall down the depth chart, the ADPs, then you can go ahead and take a flyer on. We really want to get to Pittsburgh, and maybe we can fit in Washington. Ladarius Green is on the pup list. Yikes. Not great. We loved this guy. A month ago, he was tight end 5 for almost everybody. He's like tight end 18, 19 now. We probably shouldn't draft him. What does this mean for Pittsburgh? I think it means good things for Marcus Wheaton. You see there, Ladarius Green, but I think Marcus Wheaton, this guy had 700 yards as the third, fourth option at times. So now he's going to be outside of Brown. So I like Wheaton as a guy you can take a flyer on, wide receiver 45. Why not?
For me, with this Green news, like, because they said he's having headaches. Yeah. Then they said it's his ankle.
Ankle injury.
Then it's headaches. Then it's his ankle. And for me, this just makes me more concerned with the change in the injury designation going forward, because they took out probable and now it's just questionable and now it's doubtful.
Yeah.
So questionable can now range for so many things. We've already seen wordplay. We've seen people play the political game in the preseason when they're trying to get the media off their backs and make them stop asking questions.
Yeah,
now we see Ladarius Green. He's not going to be available at all. Don't draft him. Stay away.
Yeah,
don't draft him. Makes me concerned for setting your lineups.
I mean, if you have an IR spot, maybe you can pick him up and plug him on there. It depends. Yeah. I mean, he'd probably be really nice come, you know, fantasy football playoff time.
If he's eligible.
That's my guess.
Can't play with those head injuries, man.
No, I know. It's rough.
Serious business.
It's very rough.
All right, coming up next, Pat Mayo joins us. We're talking DFS week one quarterbacks. Is he spending money? Is he saving? We'll find out soon enough. Welcome back to Fantasy Sports Today. Thanks for sticking with us. Pat Mayo joins us now, host of the Pat Mayo Hour here at the Fantasy Sports Network.
Wait, he hosts that show?
Yeah, he does.
It's not actually me.
It's a good name.
It's a stunt double.
It's Chris. It's Chris, your doppelganger.
Chris is the mirror
doppelganger.
You're the mirror version of me.
Yes.
All right, let's talk about DraftKings Week 1 quarterbacks that you like. First, let's talk about your strategy, though. What are you looking for? Low ownership, cheap options, or are you just paying up Week 1 and seeing where it takes you?
I think it depends on the tournament that I'm playing. If I'm playing in a cash game, I'll probably end up trying to save some money at the position, but especially in the millionaire maker where there's almost 2 million entries, probably going to try to find someone that no one else has and roll the dice on those guys. I mean, that's not general tournament strategy, but for one that's this large, I think that's what you have to do right now. And if you just even go look at the bottom end guys, even someone like Sean Hill becomes in play.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to take him, but no one's going to have him, and really that's the key to it. If you can find that one guy, really. We saw with Mariota last year when he threw 4 touchdowns week 1, no one had him. He was the guy that precipitated a $1 million win because he was the guy that you had to find. So I think I found some guys that have slipped between the cracks that may or may not be good. We'll see. Maybe I'll get your feedback on it. But
before we get to one of them, I know you just mentioned Sean Hill. Like, what do you think this means for Minnesota's offense? It wasn't a peeling offense anyways. AP is AP, but does it hurt him at all? Because that's all we really care about, I think, in that offense.
I don't think it changes anything.
No, it doesn't change.
Tell you the truth. I mean, people are like, oh, they're going to stack the box against AP. Well, they were going to stack the box against Peterson anyway. Like, what's really the
difference? That's our take
here
as well.
So, listen, if Sean Hill can actually stretch the field and take some shots down, it might actually open up some intermediate passing routes, short passing routes, which could help someone like Charles Johnson or maybe even Stephon Diggs at this point, or maybe even work Jerick McKinnon. I mean, play Jerick McKinnon at quarterback. Play quarterback in college. Get him back there. Run a triple offense or triple option. So, I think it's going to be fine. I think people are kind of overblowing it. I mean, I prefer to have Teddy back there, but I don't think the drop-off is all that large.
Let's talk about a guy that you're really high on just from a season-long standpoint and already just not getting any love in week one DFS. I know these prices were made, you know, about 3 weeks ago, but Jameis Winston, $6,600 up against the Atlanta Falcons.
Yeah, they didn't play well against Atlanta last season, and I think that's really factoring into the price so far, but I think it's a situation where you look at it, Atlanta looks like their offense is going to score points. I mean, that's not a crazy prediction. Tampa's defense, not the best. So it's a game where you'd have to think that Jameis is going to be dropping back maybe 35, 40 times in this game. And with Mike Evans fully healthy for week one this year, as opposed to last season, it gives them a complement of legitimate options. And when they get down in games, they play Charles Sims. They don't run the ball with him. They throw the ball to him. And the best part about Jameis Winston in these matchups, and it's not predictable whatsoever, but we do see it happen over the course of the season, when they get in close, he'll call his own number and get those valuable 6-point touchdowns over the 4-point touchdowns. So I do really like Jameis week one.
There were some questions about the kind of steps he was going to take this year, but it's seeming to trend upwards for Jameis Winston, which is good news. There were some questions around Tony Romo before we headed into the season, and if he can stay unbroken, the answer, no. Nope. He fractured the L1 vertebrae in his back, so up comes Dak Prescott. What does this do to the offense? Do you like his legs? There's been talk that maybe, you know, some rushing yards can kind of boost your numbers in DFS.
$5,000. It's the minimum on drafting. Like, I think in cash games, I might roll the dice on that.
Okay.
Just because I can afford basically everyone else.
You can do whatever you want.
Because when you start thinking about it, like, Jamal Charles is in question for week one. Spencer Ware might be available at $4,400. James White is like $3,700. You can put these guys in your cash game and then just pay up everywhere else. If you take those three guys on your team, you can get Julio. I know the Millionaire Maker is just the Sunday slate.
Yeah.
But like, even if you didn't want to pay up for Gronk and you play a Sunday, Monday night, you can get Jordan Reed in there too.
You can get Beckham in there. You can get whoever you want.
So I think that's the way that you want to play it. And like you said, the floor with the legs and the rushing yardage and the potential touchdown upside on the ground really makes Prescott a very intriguing play against a pretty substandard defense, too. Like, well, let's not kid ourselves. The Giants' defense is not great.
No, it's not great. And another couple of teams don't have great defense here that we're going to talk about, too. Cleveland and Philadelphia. Both these teams play each other week one. We've seen so far RG3 looking kind of the old RG3 at times.
The good part is he's taking shots.
Taking shots downfield, moving around in the pocket. Also, when he gets hit, he's getting hit, which is concerning. But week one, we know right now that he's healthy. Is this a game that you're going to target with Sam Bradford maybe on the other side as well?
Well, Sam Bradford's the intriguing one for the giant tournaments, because I don't think anyone's going to own him. He's somewhat overpriced at $6,400. And we know about the A-dot. Sam Bradford's not taking shots downfield, but maybe he is now in this offense. Although I don't think the Doug Peterson offense is going to be super vertical.
No.
But I can see a lot of completions, a lot of yardage. Maybe the receivers in this game, or maybe even someone like Darren Sproles, is interesting just because of the low A-dot nature of Sam Bradford. He doesn't take a lot of shots downfield. A lot of passing close to the line of scrimmage. Good for receptions, bad for yardage. But we'll see how that entire game goes. I just think he's going to be like 1%, maybe 2% owned. And if he is a guy that just hits 4 touchdowns in that game, you then have boxed out most of the field, and you have a very good chance, as long as you hit your other guys, of competing for some big money.
Yeah. When you look at Cleveland, I just want to talk about their offense as a whole, for example. Pryor and Coleman are the two guys that RG3 has before Gordon comes back. Who takes the bigger hit, do you think, once he returns?
I think it's Pryor, because I think that Pryor and Gordon are similar, not so much similar in their skill set, but similar in their size, similar in their speed, and similar in the routes that they run. Just Josh Gordon happens to be better at all of these things. But week one, Terrell Pryor is a very intriguing option.
Yeah, he absolutely is. Joe Flacco, $6,700.
Do we got time for that? We do have time for Joe Flacco.
Bills pasty. Sucks.
Not very good.
Yeah. It is really bad. And everyone's just going to be like, oh, Joe Flacco, he didn't do anything last year. They don't have any receivers. They just lost their tight end for the season. Who cares? Play Buffalo. Just take some shots downfield. Even Tyrod Taylor and Sammy Watkins on the other side of the ball, when you look at the Ravens' defense, they didn't really improve the secondary at all. The run defense, very good. But I think that game is going to be a lot higher scoring than people may think. And when you have Flacco and you bring in someone like your buddy Mike Wallace.
Hey, you said it, not me.
And Steve Smith is back. It just gives you a lot of options to take vertical shots down the field. And if that's going to be the case, then there could be a lot of yardage, a lot of touchdowns, a lot of upside to be had with Joe Flacco.
Go ahead.
Does your strategy rely like that, though? Do you want,
in this type of tournament,
in a tournament play, maybe get that pass catcher, that deep threat option for that quarterback, and just pair them up?
Someone like DeSean Jackson, someone like Mike Wallace, that's to be seen whether he's still competent or not. But those tournament type receivers, ones that aren't going to catch 7 balls for 80 yards and hopefully you get a touchdown, like, that's their floor. The Jarvis Landry's of the world. You don't want those guys in tournaments. You want to take the deep shot guys. Maybe someone like Torrey Smith. He's been so bad that now everyone's written him off again. But listen, if Torrey Smith finished the game with 4 catches for 171 yards and 2 touchdowns, that would be a game that Torrey Smith has. That's why you put him in these giant fields when he's going to be low owned. That way you can capitalize on that upside.
Just before we get out of here, Pat, you talked about using Flacco against Buffalo because their pass defense is terrible. Do you have a secret defense maybe that you're targeting? Someone
Niners.
That's falling through the cracks.
Niners.
San Francisco
Niners
defense.
D week one. If they can just shut down Gurley, which is a tough task.
Yep.
But when the other team runs the ball a lot, they're going to milk some time off the clock here. They're a very cheap defense. I don't think it's the highest upside. I think if you're going to play for upside, people are starting to buy into the Titans offense a little bit, and people are kind of down on the Vikings D now. The Vikings D is going to get to the quarterback. That's going to help. And you mentioned Robert Griffin just getting beat up all the time. Eagles D still has a good pass rush.
Yeah, they're much improved. It remains to be seen, but bringing in Schwartz and some other pieces so far in the preseason,
and
they've looked okay.
No Alex Mack in Cleveland. Like, Robert Griffin's going to be up for grabs, and where he does so much scrambling and extends the play. It's like Russell Wilson. Guy gets sacked a lot. Yeah. And listen, Robert Griffin is no Russell Wilson.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Taking shots up the field, taking shots back in the pocket, scrambling. He's just taking shots.
It was fun to watch game two of the preseason, but game three, he's struggling. He took some hits. I'm worried about
that. The thing that people don't realize about daily fantasy defenses is it's not about shutting out the other team. It's not about limiting them to 100 yards. You want to play against the other team that's running the most plays. The most plays that the other team runs, with the higher opportunity you have for picks, for interceptions, and pick sixes, that's going to be really key. Pressure is the biggest thing you can have.
Yeah. Awesome, Pat. Thank you so much for your insight as usual. We'll be right back. Ray Flowers joins us to talk about Ryan Tannehill.
Ooh.
We'll see. This is Fantasy Sports Today. Thank you for joining us. It is Fantasy Alarm Week, which means some of the best in the biz have been joining us throughout the week and will continue to. So we are very happy to welcome Ray Flowers, who also doubles as Sirius XM host. I've been having trouble saying Sirius all day, Ray. How's it going?
Good. Thank you guys for having me on. I appreciate it.
Hey, Nev, thanks for coming on, man. We love to have you. Let's get into some fantasy football stuff. I know we talked fantasy baseball with you before, but we haven't had the chance to talk fantasy football. We want to know who Ray Flowers is targeting come draft day. I want to know a quarterback that you want to take, maybe you're willing to take a shot on, maybe this guy's not getting a lot of love, outside maybe the top 15 quarterbacks.
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting because there's that huge push at the top for the big guys at the quarterback position, and then there's really nothing. And, you know, you'll often see guys like Matt Ryan and Matthew Stafford taken well outside the top 10. I really like Ryan Tannehill as well. All three of those guys I mentioned could even be out of the top 15 in some drafts. And, you know, you look at Tannehill, and they've opened up the offense. Adam Gase is there, given a little bit more flexibility. We're hopeful that, you know, a guy like Jordan Cameron can come back, that Devontae Parker can finally do something. You know, they think they've got things figured out in the backfield with the addition of Arian Foster. So I think a guy like Ryan Tannehill, who, you know, I mean, he's not great. He's not going to be a top five quarterback, but just like last year, it's certainly possible that he sneaks into the top 10 when the season's over.
Out of Miami's offense, which player's success do you feel is as closely tied to Tannehill's success?
Boy, that's a really good question. You can't say Landry because all he does is throw the ball to Landry. So I think it's probably Parker. I mean, and Parker, he's such an unknown. You know, he's dealing with more injuries this season. He had all those issues last year. Theoretically, he's got the ability to stretch the field, which is something they could use because Jordan Cameron didn't do anything because Mr. Landry is more of an underneath guy. Parker's the guy that they really want to stretch the field. Now, the question is, can Parker / Stills, let's not forget him, can those two guys actually stretch the field, or will Tannehill hold them back? That has been the issue with him. Mm-hmm. He did improve a little bit last year with the deep ball Tannehill, but it is still something that he is not good at. It's something that's a work in progress, and then unless and until he really can get over the top of a defense, that could hamper both those wideouts.
Are you willing, Ray, to take a shot on a guy like Parker who has all these injuries? And I'm going to tie in Breshad Perriman as a guy we've never really seen before. Now, when you get into a situation where you're looking at these wide receivers that you can take, and you're thinking about Baltimore here, for instance, Steve Smith Sr. coming back from injury, Breshad Perriman, we haven't seen him yet. We saw Kamara Akin with a nice season last year, but it wasn't with Flacco. Are you willing to take the riskier guy with the more upside, or do you just want a safe pick?
I will take the upside pick at the right point in the draft. Like, I'm not going to take an upside pick like Parker or Perriman to be my third wide receiver. I'd really struggle to even make him my fourth wide receiver, which means, if I'm doing a draft, I'm not getting these guys. Mm-hmm. I would rather take at that point a guy like Kamar Akin, who you mentioned. I think that, you know, you look at what the Ravens are doing. Their backfield's a mess. Their tight end position's a mess. You look at the wide receiver core. Steve Smith is, I don't know how he's been so good the last couple of years. He really defied odds there. Then he gets hurt. Does he have that explosiveness that he needs? He's such a small guy. Like, if he loses that any bit of his burst, I don't even know what he can contribute. This Perriman, I have no idea. Until I see that guy, I just, yeah. So Aiken would be the guy I would choose with the Ravens, being, you know, admitting that he's an Anquan Boldin type of guy. He's a guy that we saw last year. He's not, you know, going to light the world on fire, but it doesn't mean he couldn't end up leading that Ravens team in receiving this year.
Let's talk about Oakland, because yes, their offense is primed for a little bit of an offensive explosion here. There's been a lot of talk around this office about Latavius Murray. There's been some hype around Washington, but really the question goes between Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree. And Cooper had a great year last year, and everyone thinks he's going to take this step forward, but people forget, Chris and I were talking about Crabtree led in targets, receptions.
Red
he also led in targets. He's only 28 years old. Why is everyone forgetting about him, and do you like him this season?
Well, I think that there's two things that are going on there. One, Cooper is a better talent, and if one of these guys is going for, you know, 90, 1,412, it is Cooper. I don't think there's any debate about that. Mm-hmm. But you are correct. That doesn't mean that Michael Crabtree can't have another season of success like he did last year. It's pretty rare, even in this pass-happy era, that a guy catches 85 passes for 9 touchdowns, and you don't talk about him much. You're totally right with that. Crabtree, you know, he was ascending for a while, then he got hurt, and there were all these questions about would he ever get back there. He didn't really look good in his last season with the Niners, but last year he did catch those 85 passes, did have almost 150 targets, got in the end zone those 9 times. I don't think that Crabtree is an end zone threat per se. He's not, you know, this really athletic guy that's going to outleap people in the corner of the end zone. Mm-hmm. I think he's more of a possession guy, moving the chains. And again, I do think that Cooper of the two would be the one that could explode this season, but it is certainly possible that Crabtree might return better value given his cost on draft day, because he's going well into the 30s at that wide receiver position.
Ray, about a month ago, a lot of talk Duke Johnson was going to really take a step forward. You know, a new offensive coordinator, you know, in Cincinnati, things work really well in that backfield with two backs. But I want to talk to you about Duke Johnson, just clearly with him, because lately over the past couple weeks, it's just been RG3, Pryor, Gordon's coming back soon, Coleman's now on the field. Is Duke Johnson still, does he still deserve the hype that he got about a month ago?
I think he does. This is a Hugh Jackson offense. He does know how to utilize the backfield, as you noted, with the Bengals did it for years with Hill and Bernard. Everyone loves Josh Gordon. I don't. I'm one of the few that says,
okay,
we still got almost 6 weeks before this guy's even eligible to play. Can he stay clean for 6 weeks? I don't know. You know, Terrell Pryor is a converted wide quarterback. Who knows? Corey Coleman, great, but he's a rookie. You know, I just look at this in RG3, who's looked good, but he's had some rough spots too here in preseason. I think that Duke Johnson, you know, is still, as they say, going to get his. I mean, you know, as a rookie last season, you know, guy caught 60-plus passes, and not many people seem to notice that 2 months ago. As we've gotten closer to opening day, his ADP, is on the rise. People are talking about him more, so he's not as good a bargain as he was if you had your draft early. But, you know, I still think not just the catches. I'm not a huge fan of Isaiah Crowell either. I think that if Crowell struggles on the ground, we might see a little more Duke Johnson rushing the football and maybe potentially rushing the ball near the goal line than we do in like the scenario with the Bengals, where we had Giovanni Bernard clearly taking a backseat to Jeremy Hill in that situation.
Yeah, we got to get out of here, Ray, but I mean, it's just a good point, because not a lot of people know that Duke Johnson caught all those balls. He was one of 4 backs to have at least 100 yards, 100 attempts on the ground, and plus catch 50 balls. So he still is viable in standard leagues as well. Ray, we really appreciate your time, man.
Anytime. Thank you both.
Thank you so much, and make sure you guys catch Ray Monday to Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on SiriusXM. And yeah, Duke Johnson, interesting. I think he has an opportunity to overtake Isaiah Crowell, not just as a pass-catching back. We love labels here.
We do.
Bye.
Have a good one.
See ya.